This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehigis Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It is a natural consequence of an economy where crude oil is responsible for about 90% of all foreign exchange earnings.
That's fiscal governance expert Izi Onyakipri saying COVID-19 isn't the only reason that Nigeria is heading towards a recession. Details coming up. Also, farmers in five southern African countries need support as they fight off a locust invasion. And in Mozambique, people are fleeing attacks perpetrated by groups allied to the Islamic State network. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. The Southern African Development Community is urging the international community to provide financial and technical support to farmers in the region as they try to fight off a locust invasion that is posing a serious threat to food security. SADC says the African migratory locust has invaded five countries and swift action is needed before the summer growing season starts. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
SADC's call follows a warning by the UN Food and Agriculture Organization about the dangers posed by the outbreak, which is unrelated to the locust infestation that has devastated parts of East Africa. Esaya Jalele, program officer for crops at SADC, says the first invasions were recorded in February in Angola, Botswana, Namibia, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Jalele says those outbreaks were successfully fought with pesticides, but resurfaced in June, posing a serious threat to the planting season due to begin next month.
One of the biggest challenges that we face as a region is regional food insecurity, and any challenges that adds to the already ailing situation needs to be addressed. The pest is an addition to already number of pests and diseases that affect our crops.
He says most SADC members are helping farmers by targeting breeding hotspots with pesticides, often aerial spraying from planes or helicopters. However, he says these interventions are very costly, hence their plea for financial and technical support. Lola Castro, Southern Africa Regional Director at the World Food Programme, says the local invasion is a big blow, considering that 44.8 million people in the region are already food insecure.
We need preventative actions to avoid the full spread of the pest all over the region. And we are not seeing in Southern Africa what we have seen in Eastern Africa, but if we don't take immediate action, we will be in trouble.
Chigoti Chavuta, Southern Africa Humanitarian Advisor for Action Aid International, says a mixed approach is needed to battle the locust outbreak.
We are encouraging communities through the partner organizations to not stick to one form of prevention, but to use several means, especially the local knowledge that is in the community mixed with science to respond and to prevent this coming into crisis.
Food Agriculture Organization says a swarm of locusts can devour enough crops to feed 2,500 people per day. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Egyptian authorities say they will refer some 54 million people to prosecutors because they did not vote in last month's Senate elections. Despite increased fines for not going to the polls, only 14.2% of eligible voters cast their ballots, according to data released by the National Elections Authority. At the end of July, several parties said they would boycott the election, saying free and fair polls cannot be held in Egypt in the current climate. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Said Sadek, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, about punishing voters.
There is a law regarding that citizens have to exercise the political rights and vote. And if they fail to vote, they will get a fine. But it had never been applied. Since 2014, a new law that came raised the fine to £500. And any registered voters who fails to vote will have to pay this money. So it has become a custom. Every new election, you get this threat that every citizen has to vote. But it is not obligatory like a military service. Military service, you can be imprisoned. You cannot get imprisoned for not voting. You only pay a fine.
The mass referral of 54 million Egyptian voters has raised questions over the country's ability to hold trials for so many people and the real motive. What's your take on that?
A defaulting registered voter can be easily fined in 2020 rather than before, because now citizens' databases are now digitized. They can be easily applied on defaulters whenever they apply for any government service. However, this also requires sifting those with legal excuses not to being able to vote, like being out of the country, sick or whatever. Some even are raising the issue about coronavirus, traveling because this is the summer time. So these are the general technical issue. But what is politically behind it? The minimum quorum for any Egyptian election is 5%. And what the government is fearing is that next parliamentary election, which is very important, late October, will have a low turnout because in the last 5 years of the term of this parliament, people were not happy with its performance. It did not do the job they were expecting in monitoring the executive authority. On the contrary, they just felt that the parliament is just an extension or branch of the executive authority. There was no checks and balances or separation of power like in the American political system. So what people just felt about the parliament is that it's not serving them. And so there was this fear that the next parliamentary election turnout would be very low. And so one way to push and target citizens who may not be voting is to affect the budget and finances by saying that if you don't show up, you will be paying £500, and maybe also go through the legal process of prosecution, or any important documents you want to get across the government will be very difficult.
Only 14% of the eligible voters cast their ballots according to data released by the National Elections Authority. What is the message the Egyptian voters are sending to the government by such low turnout?
In 2014 constitution, the Senate was cancelled. And that was a request of many people because they just felt it's a waste of money. It's a club for government loyalists. It does not do any job. It's just a waste of money. So when the government restored it again in the referendum of last year, people were not really convinced. And so the low turnout just showed that this is not really serving Egyptian national interests or what people really want. Many political systems in the world are unicameral, with only one legislative chamber. A bicameral legislature is only common in large countries or multi-ethnic countries like the US or the UK. But no clear reason for a new Senate in Egypt to serve urgent political needs. And that's why people were not happy about it. And so this is a message that was sent that, again, they are not happy that you add this new political body that would only have continued this tradition of an exclusive club of poor government loyalists.
That was Said Zadek, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi. In northern Mozambique, people fleeing attacks by a group that's allied to the Islamic State network of extremists continue to stream into the port of Pemba. The violence began in Cabo Delgado province almost 3 years ago, and aid organizations say it's claimed many lives and displaced hundreds of thousands of people. Darren Taylor reports.
The International Committee of the Red Cross is still helping Mozambicans who lost everything because of Cyclone Kenneth a year ago. Now, says ICRC Southern Africa Chief Mamadou Sow, It also has to deal with the suffering caused by an escalating and increasingly brutal Islamist insurgency sweeping Cabo Delgado.
It has really turned this province to an inferno. Thousands and thousands of homes have been burnt to the ground. Thousands of people have been killed. Schools, healthcare facilities have been destroyed and reduced to rubbles. Farmlands have been destroyed.
Fighting between militants and government soldiers in areas that were once safe is forcing inhabitants to escape to Pemba on the coast.
Some are coming by foot from the interior of the country, others are coming by boat. But by and large, they are coming with absolutely nothing. You're talking about two kinds of displaced persons, one fleeing preventively, so they feel the violence coming closer, but you have an overwhelming majority who are fleeing because their homes were destroyed, their livelihoods are decimated.
The ICRC is providing displaced people with essentials such as personal hygiene items and kitchen sets. It has also given cash to some highly vulnerable families. Much more is needed, says So. But in the middle of the darkness and desperation, something great, as he describes it, has happened.
An overwhelming majority of these people who fled the violence, they arrived in town and they have been, by and large, welcomed and hosted by communities. I'm absolutely inspired by the compassion, and the solidarity of those who've really welcomed them and shared with them the very meager resources that they have.
The ICRC also is working with local health authorities.
When towns see their population increase overnight, the facilities get overburdened. So the Red Cross is on the ground supporting and beefing the capacity of the primary health care centers in town.
This is especially important in Pemba, one of Mozambique's COVID-19 epicenters. With a population increasing in the town because of the violence in the interior, Sao says the risk of a surge of infections is now very real. Most of the displaced people are living in overcrowded conditions under which coronavirus is easily spread. The Red Cross, together with the World Health Organization and other aid groups, has built the country's biggest coronavirus treatment facility in Pemba.
It's very paradoxical. We spend a lot of effort and time with support from WHO, from MSF to build it. But our dearest hope is that it will not be used at its fullest capacity. But it has the capacity right now to manage 200 beds, and it could be scaled up quickly to 400.
But for now, So says the ICRC's greatest concern is the fallout from the extremist attacks. So he's making a plea.
Most importantly, there is the need for us to remind everybody who is involved in violence in Cabo Delgado to uphold human dignity, to respect the lives of those who have nothing to do with the fighting. It's the law, but it's also the right thing to do.
Saul knows, however, that in situations like this, the forces involved more often than not ignore what's right. The ICRC, he says, remains committed to helping the people of Cabo Delgado, no matter what the risks are. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South Africans are angry about American media reports that President Donald Trump privately disparaged South African icon Nelson Mandela, the nation's first black president and Nobel Peace laureate. The alleged comments, which Trump denies, are full of profanity and include Trump saying of Mandela, he was no leader, and are part of a tell-all book by indicted former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen. With the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and the collapse in oil prices, the Nigerian economy is plunging into what could be its worst recession in four decades. Reporter Gifta Gariga from Abuja, Nigeria, takes a look at how the country can fend off this looming recession.
A new World Bank report estimates that Nigeria's economy would likely contract by 3.2% in 2020, assuming the spread of COVID-19 is contained by the third quarter of the year. However, it says if the spread of the virus becomes more extensive, the economy could contract further. The economy faced serious challenges in the first half of 2020 with the pandemic's disruption on the microeconomic environment. A fiscal governance expert, Eze Onyekpere, blames the looming recession on over-reliance on crude oil.
There is no special expertise in the prediction that Nigeria will enter recession, considering the over-reliance of the Nigerian economy on the process of crude petroleum. It is the natural consequence of an economy where crude oil is responsible for about 90% of all foreign exchange earnings.
The special advisor to the Minister of Finance, Yunusa Abdullahi, said a robust financing mechanism has been designed to increase revenue support for the economy. But he urged Nigerians to brace for tough times.
No country prays to go into recession. The prediction for the world economies, Nigeria inclusive, is tough times ahead. So every country will have to brace up for the tough times. And Nigeria has, over the course of the advent of the pandemic, introduced various initiatives early on to cushion the effects of the pandemic.
The economy had been forecast to grow by 2.1% this year, but that was before COVID-19. The pandemic has led to a reduction in growth by more than 5 percentage points, according to the World Bank report. Adekole Ijogi is a political economist. He described the economy as vibrant despite the harsh effects of COVID-19. He says getting the microeconomic environment right would help avoid the recession.
Government needs to increase access to capital to this huge informal sector that we have in the Nigerian economy. Also, to improve balance of trade will also help because the Nigerian economy is heavily dependent on importation. To increase export and reduce importation will also help.
A recession would be the second in 4 years after the country suffered through one in 2016. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
South Africa's economy is reeling from the effects of COVID-19. The gross domestic product figure released today shows a contraction of 51% in the second quarter of this year. Statistics South Africa, the official data gatherer, says 9 out of 10 industries contracted. Reporter Vicky Stark spoke to economist and senior lecturer at Wits University School of Economics and Finance, Lumakili Mondi.
Mondi, who serves on the Presidential Economic Advisory Panel, says they're not surprised by the 51% GDP decline. He said South Africa had already been in deep economic crisis before the lockdown.
South Africa now is up against the wall. It's got no choice but to embark on deep structural economic reforms that include freeing the airwaves by allowing the spectrum to be broader and be accessible, to lower the cost of data, particularly for millions of South Africans who are now studying and working online.
Mondi says the continuous power outages now taking place despite the lockdown are not helping. He's calling for an end to the monopoly generation by the state-owned company Eskom.
This is also time for allowing other players to come in and generate so that South Africa recovers at a much faster pace, because power as well as telecommunication are now accessible, can be delivered on time, and therefore jobs and other opportunities, including investment, can take place. Without those, I think South Africa faces a massive, massive challenge to deal with its own problems of poverty, unemployment and inequality, which have worsened due to the lockdown and the pandemic that is affecting all of us the world over.
The International Monetary Fund has given South Africa a $4.3 billion loan to address the COVID-19 pandemic. Mondi says the money can only help if economic reforms take place.
Given that South Africa is deeply divided today, we worried that these divisions may in fact undermine the reforms that are required, and South Africa may end up defaulting on these loans.
Mondi says urgent action must be taken to unite the nation. The quarter-on-quarter fall is the fourth consecutive decline in a row. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
In Harare, municipal run clinics have been a source of affordable health care, strategically located in communities with essential child and maternal facilities. But that hasn't been the case lately. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has more from Harare.
Ishmael Munemo is a new parent. He recalls the challenges of getting their infant daughter immunized.
From the day she was born, we were told by the hospital that they don't have the requisite BCG shots, which are supposed to be administered soon after birth. Firstly, we went to cancer clinics, and there were scheduled days that she was supposed to go there to get the shots. Some of the cancer clinics were closed also.
He says the few open clinics had long queues that would have been difficult with an infant less than 2 weeks old. They finally got the shot in a private health institution at $5. While the fee may sound very small, it is beyond the reach of many, with inflation and other economic ills running rampant. Michael Chideme is the spokesperson for the Harare City Council.
Clinics closed because of the COVID pandemic. Some of our staffers had been affected by COVID, so we had to close down the institutions to do investigations and to fumigate. Yes, we've opened some, about 14 or 15 health institutions that are operational.
But the combined Harare Residents Association says only 8 of 42 clinics remain open. This is happening against a backdrop of a long nurses' strike. James Maiden is with UNICEF Zimbabwe. He says COVID-19 has strained the health sector in more ways than just treating those who have contracted the coronavirus.
COVID-19 has had a negative impact on the health and well-being of children and on the delivery of essential health services in Zimbabwe, particularly the disruption of the expanded immunisation program services. Disruption of immunisation services, even for brief periods, will result in the increased likelihood of outbreak-prone vaccine-preventable diseases, which can cause a huge burden on the health systems.
He adds that UNICEF has noted a decrease in immunisations in the first half of the year compared with 2019. UNICEF says parents should ensure they maintain schedules for their children's immunisation to avoid having to deal with preventable diseases in the near future. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.